Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We're late getting the start here. We got some computer glitches going on. Trying to fix all that and get Tony the Tornado on. We're going to have Holly Yargo on a little bit later, about 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. And we're going to talk about UFC 134, of course. We got a few other stories to deal with before then, though. And, of course, we have our first boxing guest in a while. It's going to make Tony happy with Ray Mercer, Merciless Ray Mercer, coming on in the 9 o'clock Eastern hour. So stay tuned. Hello. What happened there? Hello. I have to turn back. That was weird.
Hello?
Hello, there he is.
There you go. Somebody forgot about me.
Yeah, introduce yourself. I'm late again.
This is the Tornado, Tony Pinnicott, your number one guy.
All right. Of course, we're getting a little late start here, but we've got some news to cover in the first few minutes before we get Holly on. As you know, we have Ray Mercer on the guest list tonight. He's the only guest, so there's not really a list.
That's a very good guess.
Yes, it is. And I was thinking, in my MMA angles, that the best question to ask him would be whether he wants a rematch with Kimbo, even though it's an MMA fight with Kimbo was an exhibition. I would think that he'd love to go toe-to-toe with him in the boxing ring if he could get an opportunity, but I don't know how far removed he is from training, so I was interested in asking that, but of course you've got probably a million boxing questions for him, right?
Absolutely. I've been following Ray Mercer ever since I was a young guy. I remember him actually coming out of the Olympics. And that's probably the first question I want to ask him about is, we're talking about a guy that was a WBO heavyweight champion, fought guys like Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis, Tommy Morrison, a lot of really good fighters, Bert Cooper, Francisco Damiani, I mean, a lot of top-quality fighters. I want to ask him about his amateur career, because that was the Olympics, 1988, when Merciless Ray won the gold medal in the heavyweight division with the controversy with the Roy Jones. And that is what prompted the change to this atrocious scoring system we have now. And obviously this is no disrespect to Ray, because Ray was a legitimate Olympic gold medalist. That was boxing. Olympic boxing was exciting. 76 with, even back in like the 60s, Ali was a gold medalist. Joe Frazier was a gold medalist. George Foreman was a gold medalist. And you have, your great 76 teams with Sugar Ray Leonard, the Spinks brothers, a lot of great fighters there. And you had your 84 team with, Holyfield, Mildred Taylor, Pernell Whitaker, Mark Breland, a lot of great fighters there. 88 was really the last good American Olympic team you had, standings-wise. You take a look at it like that's Rich. I mean, look at some of the guys on that 88 team. You had Andrew Maynard, he had a decent career. You had Anthony Hembrick. He had an okay career. Then you had Ray Mercer, Riddick Bowe, Roy Jones Jr., Michael Carbajal, a lot of really good fighters there. Then you go to 92, and when the scoring changed, the only guy, you had Oscar De La Hoya. They had some other fighters in that year, but the story made it difficult. 96, look at some of the great fighters on the 96 Olympic team that didn't even medal or just made bronze medals. I mean, you're talking about like Floyd Mayweather didn't make it to the finals. Antonio Tarver didn't make it to the finals. They both had fights. We just thought they were winning. But because of that stupid scoring system, they didn't win. I'll tell you, with Ray Mercer's style, Ray is a very physical guy, not really overly fast, not really overly flashy, but he's a very steady type of fighter that wears you down. The Olympics right now today, Ray would probably get eliminated in the first bout. Not because the guy's a better fighter, but because the scoring sucks. You get, the road runner with gloves. The road runner with gloves is going to, win the gold medal every time.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I want to talk to him about. I want to ask him, because he was in Seoul when the robbery of the century went down with Roy Jones, and I just want to, ask him about that, what the consensus was and what the shock value was there.
Well, speaking of the whole argument over MMA or boxing, either or, we had some controversy this week with Dana White and Bob Arum going at each other in the press. And I'm sure you probably side with Bob Arum in that argument, but he said that if Manchester United or a movie was playing on Fox on November 12th, he'd be more worried than the UFC event, the first event on Fox being announced for November 12th, which is the same day as Manny Pacquiao, it's Manny and Juan Manuel Marquez. And there was some back and forth between the two of them. Dana White took it personally. He thought it was offensive, even though it was mentioned that the main event wasn't even going to be until at least like 11:30 that night when the UFC fight will be over, the whole card will be over. But then it was interesting. Today, Lou DiBella, there was a story I saw today, Lou DiBella came out and defended Dana White.
Wow.
And said he's right, because Dana White's main point was that Bob Arum's kind of helped to suck money out of boxing, but he really hasn't done much to benefit it, which was interesting. And now they're talking, that next year, 2012, will be the year that we finally see Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather. But there's all kinds of people speculating that Floyd Mayweather's going to get beat in his next fight, so that'll make it impossible.
Yeah, it's funny, because I was talking about that last week, Rich. I got my Ring magazine, and went to the bathroom, the first thing I do, because that's the only place in the world I can think. And they had any depth in there, what Ortiz has to do to win the fight. And I was going to say, this is no terrible fight. This is no, lost in the park for Floyd, first of all, because he's only fought two times in the last 4 years, almost. We're going two fights in 45 months. That's a lot. So in those fights, let's look at it. Since December of 2007, he beat a overrated and a very limited Ricky Hatton. He then beat a much smaller and, once again, older fighter in Juan Manuel Marquez. Now, Marquez is a great fighter, but he had a much, look at the size difference when he got in the ring. It looked like it was a welterweight against a lightweight. And Marquez's style was not paired up. Marquez didn't have a good style to fight Mayweather. And then he fought a very much over the hill and a very tentative Sugar Shane Mosley. So, in the last, 45 months, there's three fights in 45 months, pretty much. You're talking about fighters that were, obviously top-quality fighters, but nobody that was a complete fighter, nobody that was a great puncher,
nobody that was, you know, maximum with speed. When you look at a guy like Vicious Victor Ortiz, he's a full-blown welterweight. You know, he's a very physical guy. He's a southpaw. He's got quick hands. Obviously, he's not as quick as Floyd, but he hits pretty damn hard. There's questions about his ability. There's questions about his chin. I think Flavio Berto kind of, you know, erased the problems about his heart, which have been questioned after his loss to Marcos Maidana. You're talking about a catch here. We're going to have to see.
And speaking of tests, your boy Hank Lundy passed his test last Friday.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
Flying red colors.
A couple of the, not feedback, but the observations I've made about the fight. First of all, Hank did a very good job. You know, he was winning the fight early. He was controlling the tempo. And then, you know, in the fifth round, Diaz took it away from him. And Diaz had Lundy hurt. And Lundy was hurt there. But Hank came back. And that is a punch that I teach to the two guys that I'm training now. Just a little, I like called the rock back. Rock back, and you put the weight on your back leg, and you fire a punch right over the top. A quick, short little shot that is a good counter punch. And almost 5 minutes after the fight was over, and I stepped into my room, and I see a Facebook message from one of the kids that I trained. And he was like, "Hey, who's your friend sitting tonight on ESPN?" I said, "Oh, it's Hank. You know, he just won by knockout." He's like, "He knocked him the fuck out, man. He was awesome." I'm like, so I took a kid that just a couple months ago never watched professional boxing matches in his life, is now watching fights, and he's commenting on things. I'm like, "Did you notice the rock back that he used?" He's like, "Yeah." He goes, "That's the move you teach us." I'm like, "And that's why I teach it to you." he was all fun. He came over to train last night, and I showed him one picture I have that Hank gave me that hangs in my gym. So he thought that was pretty cool. The other observation I made about that fight was I really thought that Diaz Corner, the cut man, did a very, very poor job on that cut. I mean, sometimes you look at cuts that, you know, you're having a hard time stemming the flow of blood. It's, you know, back to the game. But when Diaz would sit down in his corner after the round was over and they would wipe the blood off, when he got up 60 seconds later, it didn't look like anybody touched it. I mean, it was still blood was cascading down his face. I'm like, are they not putting any adrenaline there? Are they not getting a Q-tip in there? Are they not doing anything to slow the flow of blood? Because that's blinding his lead eye.
Yeah.
And I said, that's going to really screw him. You know, that's just me going out there. My lead eye, my left eye is gone. Well, yeah, guess what? I'm going to be in deep shit. And as you see, the knockout punch was a punch over the top on the right side of Diaz's face, or his lead eye, and he never saw the punch coming. That's why he got knocked out.
Well, one thing that I noticed that I was pretty impressed by was when they showed the replay, you could see Diaz's ear when he got punched. Like, it was flapping all over the place. And you know, your ear is cartilage. It's not supposed to move like jello. So that's how you could tell the punch was very hard, you know. And it didn't look like it when it was in full, you know, fast motion. But once they slowed it down a little bit, you're just like, oh, man. And they actually they had a little segment they called it Punch of the Night. And then the freeze frame they showed was even worse.
Yeah, it was pretty badass, wasn't it?
Just how his face contorted and everything. And that's just power right there. And Hank's kind of a weird fighter. You know, he switches stances. He fights with both hands down by his hips sometimes and gets away with it. You know, and some people would call those bad habits, but he makes some good ones. So, I don't know. He's definitely learned his lessons from his loss, for sure. but
I hope so.
I'd still like to see him keep his hands up a little more. Being the traditionalist that I am. But that was definitely a good fight for him. Good test. He did get a little bit rocked, I think, but it was definitely more of a slip when he went down. And then I just was kind of blown away by how sloppy Diaz got. I mean, this is a guy that's supposed to have so much experience in the game and is supposed to be a lot better prepared for a fight like this. And he, I think, punched himself out just trying to get the knockout.
One of the things that he did that was, and the announcers even commented on it, he smothered his own punches.
Yeah.
I can understand where Diaz is coming from. When you get a guy on the ropes like that, you want to keep him pinned on those ropes. You don't want to let him out. And I can understand that, and I can appreciate that. On the other hand, is if you are leaning your entire body on him, you don't have the room to throw effective punches. You know, it's like almost like you're clubbing, but you're not going to get any weight into it. You're not going to be effective by doing that. I remember when I was just first starting back in 1994, 1995, and they were, you know, trying to teach me things, and I'd, you know, work on getting down the ropes and landing some shots, and the one thing you always say, don't smother yourself. You know, even if you have to force him back there, you know, you still keep him pinned in there, but enough room that you can get full leverage into your shots.
Right. It was definitely a fight worth watching, and I hadn't seen it in a I actually didn't catch it live. So the ESPN Friday Night Fights the last couple of weeks have been really quick. You know, I think the week before it was like there was a delay because of a tennis match or something.
Yeah, I was talking about that stuff.
And
I was just
this week, you know, I kept turning back and forth, waiting for it to come on, and then Hank's fight was actually over, but thank God that ESPN doesn't act like the UFC and make YouTube take down every single video. So there was like six different versions on YouTube, so I could watch it after the fact. But, you know, when the main event was going on, I definitely I knew the result before I watched it. So they kept talking about it. But a couple interesting stories I wanted to talk about before we get Holly on. The big UFC event is obviously in Brazil this Saturday. We got an interesting story coming across the wire here about Chael Sonnen, the outspoken guy who took four times the legal limit of testosterone to get ready for Anderson Silva and then talked smack about the fight when he lost. He actually talked so much smack about Brazil itself that supposedly there was a police chief down there that threatened to have him arrested because it's actually illegal to badmouth the state down there. It's not a free country like the United States, apparently. So he can't go now. He can't even go to Brazil. And not only that, but I guess one of Yushin Okami, one of his sponsors based in Brazil, said that they would pull his sponsorship if Chael Sonnen showed up in his to be in his corner. So that's what you get for being an asshole, I guess. For shooting your mouth off about stuff and death up in a whole country. And actually, it's kind of interesting that his next opponent is going to be Brian Stann. And it's the first guy that he's fought in a long time that he hasn't been able to badmouth. You know, he just he knows that, you know, this guy is spotless. He's a, you know, he's a military guy. You don't talk down about the military, even if you're fighting the guy. So he's given him the utmost respect. But, you know, everybody else, all these Brazilian guys, he's bad-mouthing. And this comes at a time when Lorenzo Fertitta has said that he wants to have four fights in Brazil next year. So apparently Chael Sonnen is not going to be on any of those cards. unless the UFC makes some kind of special arrangement. I hear the Fertittas have special guards with machine guns, so maybe they'll loan them out to Chael Sonnen when he has to go down there.
Nice.
But there's another story related to the UFC. Cyborg is back. Christian Santos, she re-signed with Strikeforce finally. She was the women's 145-pound champion and had some contract negotiations fall apart. And they tried to re-sign her, but they offered her just about the same amount that they gave her with her first contract. So she obviously wanted the promotion. And apparently that's what they gave her, even though they've been kind of iffy about female MMA. Now it looks like they're going to at least take her back for a year. So we'll see what happens there. And let's get Holly on to talk about the rest of the fights on UFC 134. For some reason, I can't get my computer working right. But the phone works, thank God. Let's see. I hope she has a list of fights in front of her. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get one. I guess we need some dialing music. See if we have the right number for her.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Holly.
Yes.
How's it going?
It's good.
Nice. Well, we brought you on to chat about UFC 134, of course, and
oh, good. Sorry.
Anything else you feel like chatting about?
I'm throwing my phone across the room.
Yeah, you could do that.
We're on the air.
Stop. So
what's that?
I said, so what's up? So what's going on?
Just, you know, the same old, same old. Just waiting for the next fight coming up.
It's in Brazil, and I was just telling Tony there's a story that Chael Sonnen has been told to stay home. He's not allowed to even be in Yushin Okami's corner.
Wow.
Okami has a sponsor from Brazil who said that they would pull their sponsorship if he showed up.
And why did they say that? I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, I just came across the newswire today. I just found out about it a few hours ago. And the way it was worded, the headline of the email, it was like, bad break for Okami. I thought he had an injury or something. But, yeah, I guess Chael Sonnen's been so outspoken about how much he hates the Brazilian fighters. He's talked about Wanderlei Silva, Anderson Silva, you know, pretty much anything to get in there under the Brazilian skin there. So there was a police chief who said he was going to be arrested if he showed up, and then the sponsor decided they were going to threaten to pull Okami's sponsorship if Chael showed up, so now he's staying home.
Well, you don't say anything bad about any fighter in case, you know, in the off chance you have the opportunity to interview them, but that's just not good business, you know?
No, not at all. Well, what do you think about that main event matchup, anyway?
Honestly, I don't think it's going to make a difference if Chael Sonnen is there or not. I don't think that Okami has an answer for Anderson Silva. For Anderson Silva to lose that fight, he would have to, I don't know, have a flu or something, broken arm. I don't know. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, Anderson obviously is going to be at home. He's going to be getting a chance to avenge a loss. I just don't see it going Okami's way.
And I think that under normal circumstances, I think that innocent zone has kind of lost passion for fighting. I think now it's just a paycheck and the completed contract and that sort of thing. But I think with him being in front of his home turf, you know, his people, and I think he's going to want to put on a good show. And I just don't see Yushin Okami having an answer for that. I mean, he's an okay fighter. He's a good fighter. He's not that good.
Well, let's put it this way. He's, like, the best Japanese fighter in the UFC right now.
And that's saying what?
Yeah, it's not much, because most of the Japanese guys haven't done well, but he's actually done better than most, so.
Right, right.
That's his
he actually embarrassed the Houston fighter in Houston at UFC 69.
Right. Now, I don't have a list of the fights in front of me because my computer's being uncooperative with me.
Well, let me just give you the lowdown.
It's actually just being nice enough to let me use the phone and not much else.
Well, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Facebook fights. Trying to find one that I actually know who the fighters are.
Your boy is fighting, isn't he?
I know!
Horace Griffin.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited about that one.
Apparently he's not, though. Have you heard the latest about his attitude towards fighting?
No.
No, well, apparently...
I
have a little bit of a connection to the guy that does some of his PR. And basically, I heard from that guy before I read the story, but that Forrest is actually not even interested in fighting anymore. He takes it like a total job. Like, it's just...
Wow, so he's his passion for it.
It's just something that he actually came out and said that he can't get better at now. He's just stuck in a rut. And he's talked about maybe changing training camps and shaking things up a little bit. But he has so much fun doing other stuff. And he's written a couple funny books. And he just likes to, go around the country and do autograph signings and that sort of stuff, but it's just, his heart is not in it anymore, it sounds like, from what he's saying. But he gets paid a lot to do it, so that's his main motivation. He even admits it. And he's obviously a painfully honest guy. He doesn't fool around and, try to make believe about any of his opinions. He shoots from the hip, so to speak. So
right.
He's come out and said it's kind of a different aspect that he, or a different attitude he has toward fighting now. He treats it like a job, and he's doing it for the money.
Well, and that's funny because I know that he's like one step away from being like one of those guys that digs a hole on the ground and lives there. he saves all of his money. You know, the only thing he spends money on is that really expensive coffee that's made from cat poop. And that's what's his favorite coffee. And he doesn't even have a new car. The car that he won as the Ultimate Fighter title holder or whatever, that's the same car he's still driving now.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't even bought a new car. And that's a little...
Yeah, he actually all the people that he's helped out. He's helped out his wife's family and putting his brother through college.
And it's just, he doesn't trust the economy, and he's pretty outspoken politically. Not that he chooses one side or the other, or that he's made a point to choose one side or the other, but this government in general, I guess he just doesn't trust them, and he doesn't believe that the economy is going to hold up much longer. And I think he thinks we're all going to be speaking some other language pretty soon or something, because I don't think he has a whole lot of faith in our government.
Well, who would? I mean, come on now. I think that little earthquake in Virginia was a little bit of a sign there. Cracked the Washington Monument.
Ooh.
It's funny because I just took a picture of the Washington Monument on Sunday.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked that there was even an earthquake on the East Coast, and then now we get the freaking hurricane all over the news. You better board up your windows there, Tony, from the way they're talking.
no tornado.
Yeah, it's not a tornado, but it's definitely a hurricane. I've never seen so much coverage of a hurricane and like, so many doomsday theories about what's going to happen with this hurricane.
Well, it's supposed to be, like, one of the biggest hurricanes historically, whatever, but apparently it's lost a little of its strength, and it's not going up to Washington anymore. Now it's going to the Gulf, and which is, you know, bad news for Texas and Louisiana. I don't think Louisiana could take much more.
Well, supposedly Texas needs rain now, so
they do.
Big for a hurricane.
I just saw, like, all of my family and friends in Houston were Facebooking about it just started raining today. Like, people couldn't believe that they woke up to the sound of thunder right now. So it just started raining. So they'll probably get, you know, like, they probably got 20 minutes of rain, and now it's done.
Yeah, sweet. Anyway, getting back to UFC. We were talking about Forrest. He's fighting the guy John Bones Jones fought to get himself on the map there.
Shogun Hua.
And what do you think?
Now he fought Shogun. He fought Mauricio Hua when Mauricio Hua came back to the UFC. And Mauricio Hua, in that fight, he was doing, they were doing okay. They were pretty much neck and neck. And then it was obvious that Hua had some kind of hand injury. But, I mean, I've seen other fighters fight their hand injuries, so I'm not giving them that kind of slack. And then Forrest Griffin choked them out, which is kind of unusual for Forrest Griffin because he doesn't generally finish a fight, really. He usually goes to decision and sometimes...
Thank you.
All right, we're back. Sorry, we had a little glitch there. We got kicked off the internet.
So where was I in my spiel about Forrest Griffin and Mauricio Hua?
You're talking about his busted hand.
Yes, he broke his hand, and I've seen fighters fight with a broken hand before, so, you know, he should have been okay. But he's been busting heads lately, so I don't know. I'm a little worried for Forrest. I want Forrest to win, but I'm a little worried about him.
Yeah, I know. It's I don't know. It's one of those fights, though. They keep putting him up against these guys who have been around forever, you know, like legend versus legend fight, sort of. You know, they put Rich Franklin, who was actually kind of the inspiration for one of the characters in that Warrior movie I got to see last week. They let an advanced screening of it. And, of course, the main character that you know, goes all the way to the final tournament there is a physics teacher instead of a math teacher.
Yeah.
Franklin.
Well, actually, Mauricio Hua has not been doing as well as I thought he'd been doing because he's got a win against Mark Coleman, so... He's got a win against Chuck Liddell, so a loss against Lyoto Machida, a win against Lyoto Machida at just the right time, and then a loss against John Jones. So
I think this is going to be one of those three-round decision fights. Maybe.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm a little less concerned because Forrest has actually been fighting really well. This, you know, even though maybe his heart's not in it, but his fists sure are. So.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I'm also looking forward to Minotauro Nogueira and Brendan Schaub. Because Brendan Schaub's coming up.
And yeah, he's kind of been getting fed the easy fights the last few.
Is that Brendan Schaub?
Yeah. You know, he hasn't really had much of a test. I think it's going to be his biggest test so far. So.
Well, he got tested pretty well. Against Gabriel Gonzaga, and he won that fight. And then he fought Mirko Krokop, he won that fight. And, I mean, while Mirko Krokop's obviously, I don't think his heart's in it anymore. He's more about Russian Croatian politics. But, I mean, that's still, you know, that's still Krokop, you know. So that's a good fight. It's a good fight to have.
Definitely.
Keith Gormley's no joke. I mean, those really aren't easy fights, actually. Chris Tischer, maybe. But I think he's been tested pretty well. He's been tested against people that are kind of on the downside. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely.
This would be his biggest fight ever. But then again, Nogueira is kind of on that downside too. So, I don't know. I think Brendan Schaub could win it.
Yeah.
And then Nogueira should retire.
Well, you know, it's kind of weird the way the UFC has been operating lately. I don't know if, you know, they encouraged Chris Lytle to retire at all, but he decided to go out on his own, I guess. And then
he did. He wanted to spend more time with his family.
Dan Hardy goes and loses that fight. It's his fourth fight in a row that he lost, and they don't get rid of him. You know, and I think that has a lot to do with his Zion sponsorship and the fact that he's on the freaking fruit punch can for his energy. He's got hundreds of thousands of those cans still left to sell, if not a million.
He's like that truck driver in Houston that wondered what that button was for and then emptied his whole dump truck on the freeway and took down a freeway sign with the bed of his truck. You know, that guy now, at this point, they've got so much invested in that guy, they can't fire him now. I mean, he's got to make that money. So, it's just for Dan Hardy. He's got tough security.
Well, we also have a few other fights here. We got Ross Pearson versus Edson Barboza.
Which is Ross Pearson versus who?
Yeah.
He doesn't even have a picture.
Well, I've heard of him. I've seen him fight a couple times.
Oh, no, he does have a picture. I take that back. But he's, I mean, he's 8-0. But Ross Pearson, if it's a stand-up fight, I think Ross Pearson's got a pretty good shot. But it probably won't be a stand-up fight.
No. Well, you know, I don't know. Could go either way. You never can predict with these things.
Yeah.
But Pearson's been around since that U.S. versus U.K. Ultimate Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that tells me right away, he's a British fighter. He's going to want to stand up. He doesn't have a good ground game because he hasn't been doing it long enough to have a good ground game.
Yeah.
So his game is striking, and Edson Barboza looks like he's probably a ground guy. Let's see. Let's check out his stats. Doo-doo-doo. He has no stats. What? No. Oh, no, he's a striker. No, he's not. He's a grappler. Okay, so he's a grappler, so I think probably Barboza's going to win if it goes to the ground. If Ross Pearson can keep it on the feet and just hurry up and knock him out before, you know, that takedown happens.
Sounds like a good conclusion there. I'll second that emotion. We also have Louise Kane versus Stanislav Nedkov, who I've never heard of.
Otherwise known as Stucky.
Stucky.
Yeah. That's his nickname. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to be Russian, right?
I would say so with a name like that. But I can't wait to hear his name announced.
Did you hear the story about the Russian guy that was just signed by, I think, Bellator? And he killed a guy outside of the nightclub the night he signed his contract? Well, this story has been going through the news like all week long, MMA news. Apparently, this is like the weirdest story. He's outside of a nightclub, and I don't know if it was his girlfriend or you know, somebody he was attached to. This kid was out there driving around a remote control car, and he said something to her like, oh, do you want to ride home in my car? You know, like joking with her. And he punched the kid and killed him.
Oh, my gosh.
Basically, they're charging him with, you know, some obscure statute there that bodily harm that causes death, but it's not quite.
That would be manslaughter.
Yeah, that would be our equivalent of manslaughter, but over there it's different. And if that's not weird enough, just today there was I didn't read it, but there was a link in my boxing links that I get every day about a boxer doing the same thing over here in the States, getting in a fight with somebody outside of a club and killing him.
Wow.
So,
Is it that internal, that decapitation thing, like what the race car driver, who I'm not nearly enough of a NASCAR fan to remember his name. Number three, whatever. Anyway, the same injury that he died from was like internal. Yes, yes. Because that's what's his name? Max Baer. He killed a guy in the ring with that same exact injury.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He caused that same injury. See, I know something about boxing.
There you go. here's a guy I've actually seen fight who's going to be on the card. Thiago Tavares versus Spencer Fisher. So Spencer Fisher. UFC 78, way back in the day, 2007 in New Jersey. And it was a pretty good fight.
That was Spencer Fisher that you saw?
Spencer Fisher, yeah.
He's awesome. I love him.
I think Tavares was on that card, too, but not sure. And interestingly enough, another guy who made his debut on that card just got released this week. A guy who, Reinhardt, I think, who got beat by Joe Lozon in like a minute. it was probably, that was actually the first standing rear naked choke that I'd ever seen in a fight. He just jumped on his back and rear naked choked him standing up.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. Like he pinned it. Like they had choreographed it.
That's sweet. Well, the best Spencer Fisher fight was UFC 60. That was in 2006. He fought Matt Wyman. And he hit Matt Wyman, and Matt Wyman was like raising his hand like, I'm okay. And then Spencer Fisher just kind of casually walked over and then threw this flying knee out of nowhere and just knocked him smooth out. It was so beautiful.
Wow. Pretty impressive. Well, what do you think about Tavares versus Fisher here?
If Spencer Fisher shows up with the right frame of mind, because he's one of those emotional fighters, if something else is going on in his life, you know, it affects how he fights. So if the right Spencer Fisher shows up, he's going to do well, because Thiago Tavares is really not that good of a fighter. He's had a bunch of really not a whole lot of great fighters, but the two really good fighters that he's fought in the recent past, like up through 2008, is Matt Wyman and Kurt Pellegrino. Kurt Pellegrino is another emotional fighter that could win or lose depending on his state of mind. Beyond that, I mean, he lost to Manny Gambarian. He lost to somebody named Nick Lentz. I don't know who that is. He lost to somebody named Shane Roller. And he won a fight against somebody named Pat Audenwood that nobody's ever heard of either. So I don't think he's that good of a fighter. And I think that, I mean, at least not the same level of fighter that Spencer Fisher is, because Spencer Fisher is more often a winner than a loser. He's had so many fights that, you know, his body's probably getting a little tired.
Yeah, speaking of a guy who might retire soon, I mean, if he loses his fights, that wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility, but I doubt he would. We'll see. Anyway, we got to kind of cut a little short here, so we're going to do the next ones just to pick. Rusamar Paul Harez versus Dan Miller, the lesser-known Miller of the two brothers.
I want Dan Miller to win, but honestly, I think Rusamar Paul Harez would probably pull it out.
He sounds like he's Brazilian.
He is, and he's actually a very good fighter. So
give him a little extra incentive to put it all on the line. And then the other Thiago versus David Mitchell. and I don't know a damn thing about Mitchell.
I don't either. So I'm going to go with Paulo Thiago because he's a really good fighter.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. And he's going to be putting it all on the line, too. He's Brazilian.
Yeah.
And that's about all we have time for. There's a few other fights there, but a lot of younger guys who don't have the big names. So we'll just skip over those guys. And until next time, we're going to get on the phone here shortly with Ray Mercer, who is a little bit of MMA experience, but I don't know if it's enough that you want to stay on the call.
No, and actually I can't, unfortunately, but I do know that he knocked out Jim Sylvia. That's impressive.
Yep.
And I know that before he went to MMA, he went to K-1, and his first two fights were against, like, K-1 heroes. So the fact that he lost those fights is not, you know, that doesn't make me think any less of this man, because that's cojones. So
yeah.
Get to him.
I didn't even know that until I checked out his Wikipedia page, so that just shows you how smart you are.
I can't remember those fighters' names that he fought, but I know, like, one Musashi was one of them.
Remy Bojanski was the other guy.
Yes.
And he
so they're like,
nice,
they're like K-1 champions, and that was his first two K-1 fights. Ooh.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
All right, well, thanks for giving us some analysis and checking in with us. We like to hear you every now and then and get your expertise.
Well, check back with me again in the next fight. So. All right, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello, Ray.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
I'm just going great, man. Doing fine.
All right. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line with us, a Philly guy. We call him the Boxing Rain Man.
Oh, yeah.
What's up? How are you doing?
You know, so
what's going on, man? Everything's good.
Oh, man.
Everything's good.
When Rich emailed me the other day we were going to be interviewing you, I was very excited. I've been following you since your amateur days. So I had I already started looking up a lot of questions.
Okay, I'm ready for all of them.
All right. Well, Ray, the first question I wanted to ask you, and I actually said this to Rich tonight, I actually emailed him this when he first sent me the notification. A lot of people may or may not know, 1988, you were an Olympic gold medalist in the Seoul, South Korea Olympics. And that actually was the Olympics that I think, in a negative way, because of the Roy Jones debacle, negatively affected what Olympic boxing is today. And I was going to ask you, you know, first of all, your experience being in the Olympics, being a gold medalist for the United States. And then, you know, what you think has gone wrong with Olympic boxing?
Well, for one thing, for as far as 1988, the Olympic team, you know, it was unfortunate what happened with Roy Jones, and I think having the Olympics over in Korea was really a bad idea because they really treated the Americans bad. And you know, to know somebody like Anthony Hendricks also, they screwed around even worse than Roy Jones. You know, he made the Olympic team, but he didn't even get a chance to put on a pair of gloves, you know. And he was in the Army, and I was in the Army. I was co-captain, he was captain. And, you know, it just hurt us, you know, that they treat us the way that they did. And that's one reason why I knew I had to go over there and I had to knock, and I fight the Korean, that I knew I had to knock him out. You know, we went through all that and everything, and I think that was the last Olympics that we, you know, we had a really good team. We didn't think we had a good team. We had a really good team, and we had a positive, and we had a real outcome. We had three gold medals, and I don't know how many silver and everything, but, you know, it was real positive then. But like you said, everything now has been a change, and I don't think it's because of, you know, what happened with Roy. I just think that I don't know, man. They changed the rules, and you have to hit. They made it so easy to rip somebody off. Now it's ridiculous. And I'm just glad that I came through when I did.
The one thing I said to Rich tonight, I said, right now it more benefits a road runner with gloves on. You know, they can go out there and they can tap, tap, tap and win. And I said,
that's right.
You know,
looking
at some of the great Olympic fighters of the past, even some before, you know, even I was born, you had guys like, Muhammad Ali would have been a very good amateur fighter because of his speed. But the two that I keep thinking about that were gold medalists, Olympic gold medalists, Joe Frazier and George Foreman. And I couldn't see them with today's type of scoring even getting out of the first bout without a knockout.
That is true, because the way they do it, you don't even need power. You have to, like you said, get in there and tap, tap, tap. And we're Americans are not tap fighters. We like to get in there
exactly.
And we like to knock out.
Exactly.
We like knockout, man. You cannot throw hard punches and be on the white all the time at the beginning of the glove and all that. I mean, it's just ridiculous now, man, the way they have the Olympics. And I'm pretty sure everybody in the world, every country in the world, is upset about the new point system, you know, with the white card kept to hit and all that. That's ridiculous. I'm glad that we didn't have to go through that. Although I knocked all my fighters out anyway.
It would have been a little bit harder if you were fighting a roadrunner, though.
That is true. That is true. You know, but I think what you can't do is you can't get over there and you can't just try to hit with the, you know, with the white part. You have to go over there and train just like you've been training for any other, you know, fight or any other Olympics, man. Because there's no way in the world that you can perfect that, the way that you have to hit with the white part and all this here, the point system. It's really messed up, man. It really is. And I hate the fact that they tell you who won the round and all that during the fight. I can't stand that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Exactly. I think you're 100% right on that. Like we've been having many discussions on here. Just talking about, I remember growing up right around the mid to late 80s when I was really starting to get back into boxing again. Marvin Hagler was, you know, he was still fighting at the time. Ray Leonard was making a comeback. Tyson was hitting his prime. And I remember I started getting my first boxing magazines right around the 88 Olympics. And I kept that tradition going to the 92, 96. And I remember every year every 4 years you would get your Ring magazine or KO magazine, and it would have your 12 American fighters, and it would say, okay, we got Ray Mercer at heavyweight, and here's his credentials, and here's where he's from, and here's what he's done, and here are his possible stumbling blocks, opponents that, you know, could give him trouble in the Olympics, and what are his odds of making, you know, the gold medal. And I used to love it because before you even stepped in as a pro, and guys like Roy Jones and guys like Michael Carvajal and all those guys, I knew who I was going to watch. And it was like, hey, Tuesday Night Fights is coming on, and it's going to be Ray Mercer. And I remember him from the Olympics. And you already had a foothold on these guys. Now it's and there were guys that fought, I think it was 2004, one of the Allen brothers out of Philadelphia, one of Nazim Richardson's boys. I've known him since he was a little kid. And I felt so bad because he was a good fighter, but the scoring hurt him. And there was no publicity going into the Olympics anymore. This kid that could have really had the foothold to stardom never got his feet off the ground.
Never. That's probably the reason, man. Like you said, you knew everything about every fighter. And, you know, who you're going to be going for and everything. Nowadays, it's like we're not with it. I don't have a fighter that's on the Olympic team now. I went to the tryouts in Mobile, Alabama about a month ago. And let me tell you, those guys, they fought hard, but it don't seem like they have the same kind of skills as the earlier Olympic fighters.
Right.
You know, such like 88. 88 was the last mass real Olympics, I mean, the way it's really supposed to be and the way it's been, and, you know, the skills have to really come out, you know, for you to get a victory and everything. Now, it's just ridiculous now. I mean, it's just hard it's just hard to get a foothold on what, you know, what's going on. These guys don't have any idea what's, they're fighting a certain way. They're not training to fight through the point system that they have nowadays. I mean,
right,
right there, they're at a disadvantage.
I remember the team in 96 had a great potential. I mean, look at all the world titles that came out of that group with it, Carver and Floyd Mayweather and Vargas and all those guys. And you're talking about only one gold medal. When you get a guy like Floyd Mayweather, who's still one of the contenders for the last 15 years, one of the best fighters in the world, losing a decision like 10-9, you're trying to tell me that guy like Floyd Mayweather only landed 9 punches in 3 rounds?
Right. That's ridiculous.
Well, we spent the last 10 minutes talking about the amateurs. Ray, you've had a great pro career. I'm more of a boxing guy, so that's my interest. I want to talk about some of the great fights you had, WBO heavyweight champion, some of the great fights you have. You want to just tell us about some of your highlights?
Well, I'll tell you one. Winning the title, WBO title fight in Francisco Damiani was spectacular for me because that guy, he looked like he was fat, you know, and he couldn't move or anything, and he was left-handed, and I was like, I didn't know what to do. I was losing every round up to the time I knocked him out. I was losing every round, and this guy, I got near thinking that, you know, I was a little overconfident by looking at his body and everything. Like, he was a little, you know, a little sloppy, fat a little bit. But that guy was fast. He had men, and he had power. And I just couldn't get a hold of that guy. And I finally threw something that we've been training, you know, to throw the whole fight. But I just kept coming back to the corner saying, I'm going to knock him out. And I threw the 45-degree uppercut. And that's what I've been, that's just something that we just may have fun in the gym throwing. And it took that to knock the guy out. And to me, that was the greatest because I had no chance of winning at all. And it's just the punch that we didn't work on that much and we just played with is the one that knocked him out. That was, to me, that was amazing. And also Tommy Morrison now. He was the hardest hitting fighter that I think I fought. You know, first 3 rounds, he was whooping my butt, and he was hitting me with them hooks that he has, and I was farting. First time I ever farted in the ring. when he was hitting me to the body, I was farting. So I swore to God, if I catch this guy, I'm going to take him all the way out. And he finally got tired after the third round. He got tired a little bit, and he started breathing hard and holding a little bit. So I knew it was time to go then, and I hit the guy, and I just kept on hitting him, man. I was just tired of taking them hooks to the body and farting. And, you know, one of the times I was thinking maybe I'm going to shit on myself or something, you know. So when I got him, I just tried just going to just take him out. That's why I just kept hitting him when I got it, man. I didn't want to get hit no more by that guy.
Never mind.
That was sweet title defense right there for me. Right there.
I remember both those fights. I remember the Damiani fight. It was when he caught him right on the nose of that uppercut and dropped him for the count. I remember watching that on pay-per-view.
That was awesome.
And then the Morrison fight, which was, I guess that was October of that year. I remember getting that one on pay-per-view when I was watching it. My dad was watching it. You know, he and I watch a lot of fights together. We still do. And we were watching that, and I remember my dad saying in the fourth round, he's like, he pointed to Morrison. He's like, he ain't got nothing left. He goes, look, when he sat down after the third round, And like I said, he hit you with some bombs there, and I think your mouth was cut real bad. And I remember my dad looked at him. He goes, "Look at the." And I was only 14 or 15 at the time, so I really hadn't gotten into boxing yet competitively. So I mean, obviously, a couple of years later, when I started training and I knew what it was all about, I'm like, yeah. Then I could see, you know, the look in his face and the breathing through the mouth. And my dad's like, he ain't got nothing left. He goes, it ain't going to be much longer.
That's right. Yeah, you cannot throw punches like Tommy Morrison was throwing for 12 rounds. It's just impossible. I mean, George Foreman may be able to do it, but we were just waiting on him. We knew that he was throwing his punches were so hard. I just knew that he could not throw that hard for 5 rounds. And I was actually waiting for him for 5 rounds, but he actually got tired at the 4th round. and start breathing and holding a little bit. And that's when I knew it was time to turn it on.
Now, he was, Tommy was definitely the last great white heavyweight. What do you think about the lack of American heavyweights in the picture nowadays and these Russians taking over?
I mean, it's ridiculous, man. I really don't understand it because it's been like our sport for so long, and we, you know, the best fights ever, you know, between Americans. And I just don't know what's going on, man. The only thing I can say is I think our trainers are going for money, and that's why they're training our best trainers are training the Russian fighters and you know all the other fighters, man. They're not really having that the American spirit that they need, that we need to be successful in boxing now. I mean, I think that's the problem. I think the money, the Russians are coming over here with the money, and they're getting our trainers and training them, and they're learning technique and everything, man. And it's just ridiculous now. The only good thing about that is we don't have to order heavyweight championship fights no more. We can watch more ESPN. That's the best part about that.
Yeah,
I think our trainers need to really be more patriotic, you know, and I think we can still get back there. But the way times is now, man, it's hard to even see a really good fight. The Russians are not exciting to fight. They might win, but they're not exciting.
Now, what do you think about your old nemesis there, Kimbo, getting into the boxing ring? Would you like a rematch?
Say what?
What do you think about your old nemesis Kimbo getting into the boxing ring? And would you ever think of a rematch with him in the ring?
Yeah, I want to put that out there right now. I would love to fight Kimbo in a real fight because he punked out the first time we were supposed to do the knuckles. But he took me down, and you know I wasn't about the ground game and whatnot. And then he got a hold of my neck, so that was it. But I actually thought he was going to get in there, keep his word, and do what he does best, and that was box. But he did what he had to do to win. But I swear to God, I dream about fighting him every night. And I know he does not have the heart to step in the ring in a boxing match with Merciless Ray Mercer. He didn't have that in the get-go. That's why he chose the other way. So he's going to punk out just like he did in MMA and boxing. Because he used to just go to the bars, his backyard brawls and stuff. He used to go to the bars and just go get drunk guys and fight them. They have to be drunk because he didn't show any heart in the game as far as, you know, him throwing fists and throwing that. He didn't show no heart. He showed that he was a punk by taking Ray Mercer down and taking me out of my element. But he did what he had to do to win. If he's happy with that, he can live the rest of his life with that, then I guess we won't get together. But if he has a little heart and he thinks I think he doesn't, then he will get back in the ring with Ray Mercer, I'm telling you. To prove himself. I can't believe it's like a slap in the face now that he's boxing now. You know, MMA, he took me down and all that stuff. He didn't want to box, but now he wants to box. And for me not to be his first fight or something like that, or even his fifth fight, it's ridiculous, man. He's a punk. That's what he is. That's what I got to say to him.
Well, I'll tell you, the press conference that you had for the Tim Sylvia fight when there was all the issues with whether it was going to be stand-up or special rules and all that, and when you went off on that press conference, it was probably the most entertaining thing I've ever seen as far as MMA goes.
Well,
boxers knocked him out.
I was actually drinking a little bit after I found out they were camped for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to a bar, and my best friend told me to find somebody else in, and I thought when they said we weren't fighting that they camped for the whole card. I'm just finding out now. I'm the only one that trained 9 weeks going home without no money. So I went to him, I said, hey, I'll fight your fight. I don't want to go home without no fucking money. And then, you know, this ain't right. I trained for 9 weeks for this. So he won't do my thing. I told him I'll do his, and we went in there, and he just knew that he was going to just get in there and just beat the shit out of me, but it wouldn't happen like that. That's the first time I ever fought mad.
And I know.
And if you're the first time,
I actually saw Tim Sylvia in Massachusetts at a fight, and he fought Pujanowski, the world's strongest man. And you don't realize how big that guy is until you stand across from him. I mean, even hobbled with his ice on his knees and everything, he looked pretty dangerous. So,
he's big. He's a big dude. He's a big dude, but I tell you one thing, I broke that chin for him. I busted his chin too. He don't want a rematch either. Nobody wants to fight me, man. I'm trying to still fight. I'm almost 50, and I'm just trying to give me one or two more fights. But they seem like they don't want to let me fight MMA because, you know, they suspended me because I had surgery on my neck, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured, and they wasn't even supposed to, you know, I had surgery on my neck. I had surgery a whole lot of places too, but they didn't stop me and check those. They just checked my neck. They didn't want me to fight MMA again because it was boxing against MMA. They were trying to say, and they still try to say that MMA is more exciting than boxing, or MMA guy can be the boxer. But I proved that it's not true.
Yeah.
And that's why they don't want me to fight again. That's exactly.
Now, unfortunately, you got guys like James Toney just trying to run his mouth to win fights instead of actually putting
them on. Yeah, he was an embarrassment to every boxer in the world.
Now he's trying to get all kinds of special rules attached. He's talking about putting together his own fight league where there's a 10-second rule. You get up after 10 seconds on the ground every time. And,
If you're going to fight another man's game, you got to fight by their rules, you know. They can't come in the boxing and change the rules. So you got to go into their sport doing what they do. You just got to get in there and knock them out. I believe it's easier to knock them out because the fight starts standing up. So we're automatically standing up. That's your chance. And that's what I took advantage of when we were fighting Tim Sylvia.
So you still keep in shape and everything?
Huh?
So you still keep in shape and work out and train and all that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just waiting on the phone call.
All right.
I would like to get one from Kimball, but I know he don't have enough heart. He don't want his wife to see him getting knocked the fuck out by Ray Mercer. That's what he's here for.
He landed one on a guy who was 0-1 and like 3-10 in MMA. First opponent.
Wow.
And when we did an analysis of that, I mean, he came out there like a bull in a china shop. He was squared up. He had his head down. He's winging shots.
Yeah.
He caught the guy with a left hook, and then he hit him with an uppercut, and the guy almost went out of the ring. And I remember turning to Rich, and I said, you know, I said, if they're going to make money with this guy, they better do it now before he gets in there with a guy that maybe is 4-5 but has been had some good boxing training. I said, if I was training a guy right now, and I'm not talking about a guy with the caliber of Ray Mercer or a guy with the caliber of, you know, a top-tier heavyweight fighter. I'm talking about a kid that maybe had a good amateur career and a mediocre pro career, and maybe he's 5-5. But the kid knows something about boxing. I said, the first thing I'm going to do is have the guy circle to the left, circle to the right, and pump a jab. Kimbo's going to come
and
right in. It's going to be like, it's going to look like Rocky III when Clubber Lang was coming straight in and they had Rocky pumping about 18 jabs in his face. That's what it's going to be. And then within a few seconds, Kimbo's going to be sucking air, and then he's going to be looking at the lights. I said, if they want to make
right,
money
exactly.
with him, they better do it quick, and they better try to grab a name as fast as they can. You know, whether it's a rematch with Ray Mercer, which I think would bring in a lot of money, whether maybe it's a guy like Evander Holyfield, who they know will take the fight. But I said, the one that, if I was a promoter right now and I was trying to make some money, I'd be calling
now
Las Vegas and asking for Mike Tyson.
That's right, because he's not going to last long.
And you know what? That fight wouldn't last long, but I bet you'd make a lot of money.
Yeah, he'll make a lot of money. Now's the time, just like you said. If you was a promoter or you was his manager, now's the time to put him in there with somebody so they can make their money now.
And that's why I'd be calling Mike Tyson. I'm like, come on, Mike, I know you're in the Hall of Fame, but you got time for one more fight. You don't want to end your career
that's
on a
right.
loss.
Yeah.
Come on, come back,
that's
fight
right.
And you figure you got the generation like me that grew up watching Mike Tyson, the people like my father that, you know, watched Mike Tyson for a long time. But then you got these younger kids. You got these people that are in the MMA that know Kimbo, and then the younger generation that knows Mike Tyson from the Hangover movies. They would get enough curiosity that it would sell a shitload of pay-per-views. And people would buy it. It would be like eating a big fast food meal. It wouldn't last long, but it would taste good going down, even though it wasn't good for you.
You're right. You're right about that. Now was the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if Mike has the heart for it anymore, though. It's just,
no, I don't think he does. I think he's done.
He doesn't even eat meat anymore. He's a
vegetarian. Yeah, I'm the next best thing.
Well, I think he'd be a much better fight for Kimbo, especially considering you guys have a little bit of history, you know?
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. I can't say it.
They were bringing money. They should do it. That's why, you know, I'm just calling the guy out. But he really is a punk. I mean, he's a punk. And I know it, too. He knows that I know it. That's why.
It was kind of funny because right when I got into covering mixed martial arts was when Kimbo was just coming on the scene, and he had a conference call that I was part of way back when somebody had actually just shown me some of his YouTube videos before I even saw him in MMA, and then I heard he was getting an MMA and a conference call, and somebody asked him, you know, what's the difference between when you used to get in those backyard brawls and when you fight today in the cage? And he said, well, to be honest with you, I used to get high before every fight.
Wow.
So he said he stopped alcohol, stopped the all the drugs, and started taking it seriously.
The reason he used to smoke and drink, like I told you, they used to go around in that limousine, and they used to go to the bars and get the local tough guy. And you can smoke and you'd be drunk and fight and knock them guys out. But they're drinking and smoking too. So that's why he used to do that. That's why he said that.
Yeah.
So it was bullshit.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, but I think his big weakness was his knee in MMA. And once he was on that Ultimate Fighter show and Dana White made a big deal about his knee and had the meetings with him and he's sinking himself in the ice-cold tub there, everybody realized all you got to do is take that knee away from him and he's nothing. And even in his first boxing match, he's wearing the big knee brace. So I don't know if he
was
6 or 7 rounds on that knee if somebody took him to deep water. So he's going to have to get...
You know what? I don't even think he'd make it to deep water.
No. Well, not against you. Maybe against...
I don't even think he'd make it to deep water.
We'll see, I think. But I don't know how long he's going to last if he doesn't keep knocking people out. I think what they're going to try to do is just to try to develop an undefeated career for him. You know, get him to opponent after opponent. Guys with records like 12 and 152.
Yeah, right, true enough.
But what do you think about mixed martial arts these days and the whole competition with boxing and all that?
I think the boxers have an advantage over the MMA guys. I think all MMA is street fighting. I think it's in it's in their blood to fight. Street fight, but that's really all it is. I mean, they got skills as like kicking and kneeing and stuff like that, but when I fought in the street, I did the same thing. I mean, they didn't look as pretty as theirs, but hey, I kicked and I did everything. I even bit a guy, you know, street fight, bro. It's just street fighting. MMA, you know what? I am not going to disrespect them guys by just saying that.
Yeah.
So it takes a person like me just to think like that. To be successful and trying to do it. But them guys, they deserve a lot of respect because it ain't as easy as I'm sitting there making the scene. It's more than just street fighting. These guys, you know, they train harder. They train harder and everything than a boxer. They do more. They do harder training than boxers do, which I think makes them crazy. But when I was training Sakimbo and I was doing the groundwork, trying to learn the groundwork, it seemed like I was in a 12-round fight every day.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Just from wrestling in high school, our practices were brutal. Just to
That's right. Every muscle in your body you use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but I think what happens is, you know, you got a couple guys there, like Butterbean's probably not the best example, but there's guys who have gone back and forth between boxing and MMA and done pretty well at it. Because one thing Tony's always even mentioned is that these MMA guys, they don't know how to box.
They don't. And it's crazy because that would be the most powerful thing to box, you know, than to really get in there and throw kicks. Because they throw punches, but they throw them wide. They don't know how to throw them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If they were boxers, if they were boxing, they'd be much more successful.
There's only a handful of guys that even have a good jab in MMA. And one of them just retired. So they're out one.
Yeah.
Chris
Lyon. Well, Ray, I'll tell you what was funny. It was a couple of years ago, and I told Rich this. There's a local, I don't know if it's still there anymore, they may have moved, but it was a gym, and they had a mixed martial arts training there. And they had some guys that were really good. I mean, some of these guys were fighting competitively. And then they decided that they wanted to start teaching some boxing skills because the guy that ran the gym was a jiu-jitsu expert. But that's all pretty much ground fighting. So they felt they needed somebody that could come in there and teach, you know, some boxing and teach, you know, some of the fighters how to, you know, throw their hands. And they were not just offering it for the adults, but they were also offering classes for kids. So they had contacted me, a mutual friend, about coming there running some boxing classes and teaching the stand-up game of boxing. And the guy that ran the program, the jiu-jitsu specialist, he was very receptive to what I was, you know, talking about. But then his wife came and she ran the actual money and she ran the club. And she was like, well, you're not going to waste time on technique, are you? I said, well, boxing's all technique, man. She goes, no, it's not. It's just punching people. I said, really?
What?
I said, you're telling me that? I looked at it, and she goes, and then she said something else. Like, oh, she goes, do you discipline people? I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, first, I don't punch nobody when I'm training them. I don't hit nobody. I don't belittle anybody. But you know, if I am the coach and I tell you to do something or how to do something, you need to listen and respect what I'm saying. Well, we don't want you to do that. We want you, when you're training these kids, we want them to be happy and have a good time. So I just want you to get them in there and just hit in the bags.
Wow.
I'm like, man, a trained monkey can tell a kid to hit a bag for 3 minutes. You don't need me to do that.
Right?
I'm going to teach you technique, and I'm going to teach you the art of boxing. I said, man, boxing is not just punching people. It's called the sweet science for a reason. And then she said, you know what? I said, find somebody else, because I ain't your guy. I ain't going to be your puppet. And you're telling me how to train boxing. I said, you've never watched a professional boxing match in your life, and you've never competed in it. And you're going to teach me how to tell me how to do it? I said, thank you. No, thank you, man.
That's right. That's right, because it is the sweet science, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only trained with him a few times. He used to come down to my gym in Philadelphia. He would move around to a lot of gyms. And one of your former opponents, in fact, one of the best plays of your career, Smoking Burt Cooper.
Yeah.
Well, tell him about the 40-ounce, Burt and the 40-ounce.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to live down in Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania, where Burt lived. And he was actually a teammate of mine on the One Lock Haven team. And he's like, I know Burt Cooper. And I'm like, I'd only seen Burt a few times down in the gym. He goes, you ought to see him do road work. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He goes, he'll be out there at 6 in the morning jogging with a 40.
Whoa. I never heard that about him, but I can believe it.
Yeah. That story reminds me of the boxing coach I used to have when I did one semester at Virginia Military Institute. And we had a coach who was ex-Marine. Well, you never say ex-Marine, but... You know, former Marine, I guess, Colonel. And he literally would run, jog with us with a cigar in his mouth.
Wow.
I met another guy from Brockton, where Jim Marciano's from, and he still does that to this day.
He still does it?
Yeah, a guy named Tony Petronelli from Brockton.
Tony Petronelli.
Yeah, that was Marvin Hagler's old trainer's son. Or brother.
Yeah.
Rich, was Tony, was that Goody's son or brother?
It's Goody's nephew. His brother.
Nephew, okay. Yeah,
Vinny's nephew?
Goody Petronelli's nephew, Tony.
Oh, okay. Alright.
He trained for a couple fights myself. They were only sparring matches. They weren't real fights. I tried to make a comeback of my own. I only did amateurs, and he put me in against the kid who later won the Golden Gloves for New England. And the kid broke my rib, so Tony and I didn't train much after that.
Ain't nothing you can do about that.
No.
We all have broken ribs. I had one, and there's nothing you can do about it.
No. It sucks, too, because, you know, the number one thing that you want to do when you're injured is run, you know. If you got a bad hand or something, you can usually run. But when you got a broken rib and every breath is killing you, it's really tough.
You're right about that. I've had one. I think Holyfield broke my rib one time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that fight, too. That was another good one. That was one of Holyfield's fights right before he took the fight with Tyson, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. It sure was. Yeah, and Lennox Lewis was another good one, too. I felt like I won that because I was American gold medalist, and he was from Britain, and he's a gold medalist. But we're fighting in my country, and the fight is close. I should have got the fight. As a matter of fact, Lennox Lewis knew it, too, because he told me he's going to send me half the check. I'm still waiting on it. I'm still waiting on it.
That's quite the compliment. My biggest compliment in any kind of combat was after a wrestling match with our arch rivals in high school, the kid's father came up to me and told me that he thought I beat his son, even though the son won on points. So that was a big honor, but I didn't get any pick out of it.
Right.
I'll just say my favorite, Ray, you'll love this one. My favorite was I was fighting down at the Naval Academy. I was just coming with my first fight after having pretty serious knee surgery, so people weren't sure how ready I was going to be. But I fought this kid from Navy, and I lumped him up pretty good. And my trainer from Philly had come down for the fight, and he brought his young son. And the fights were over, and actually they kind of snuck me into a back room so I could re-ice my knee because it was starting to really aggravate.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad and my trainer came in and they were laughing. I'm like, well, what's so funny? They're like, we were just talking to your opponent. Now, this kid I thought was, he was at the Naval Academy, but he was from somewhere like Colorado or Texas or somewhere Midwest. And he pulled my dad and my trainer aside. He goes, you know, I've always heard rumors about Philadelphia trained fighters. And he goes, tonight I found out the hard way how true it is.
Oh, yeah. What the hook?
Do what?
The hook, the Philadelphia fighter, they got that hook. They got that Joe Frazier.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
A lot of them work on that Joe Frazier hook, boy. And I'm telling you, that's what Bert Cooper was. He hit me with that, too. We were fighting. I spent 2 days in the hospital after that fight.
Yeah, the hook was always my favorite punch, too, but I tried to model mine after Mike Tyson, the left hook. Even though
You tried that a little.
Just with that peekaboo style, you know, I don't understand why he ever got away from Kevin Rooney. He had that style.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
Okay.
One thing I always try to ask all our guests is, what do you love most about the fight game?
What I love most about the fight game is, you know, to me, boxing is a 24-hour job. You know, I like the challenges of when you're fighting a high-class fighter. To me, getting over the nervousness was actually fun to me, you know, because, you know, they say fear is a boxer's best friend, and I have fear. And I had fear when I was training for the fight, because, you know, just thinking this guy can get in there, he can kill you, will make you, you know, make you train hard. So it was mostly mind games to me and getting hit. I didn't like getting hit that much.
Nobody does.
But, you know, I like the challenges of boxing, man, and it challenges you to be a real man, a real warrior. And that's what draws people, you know, to the game.
Yeah, definitely.
One question I always like to ask everybody, you know, being a former fighter myself and now training other young guys, I always felt like the transformation for me started in the training or in the dressing room when the coach would start taping up my hands. One coach was a part of my amateur career, and when he would start taping up his hands, it was almost
very ritualistic, and he would get there, and he would just look me in the eye, and he would just, you know, you could see him start to change, you know, with his attitude. You know, like, we'd be talking earlier, we'd be getting ready, but then we'd start talking to you, like, you know what you got to go out there and do tonight. And he'd be like, it was like a steel focus in his eyes, and he'd be getting, like, pumped up. And by him doing that, when he was done, I was just, you know, like I felt like Superman. And, and the inspirational talk he ever gave me was my last amateur fight at my home campus at Lock Haven. I was fighting a guy from U.S. Military Academy, U.S. Military Academy by the name of Michael Jordan, of all things. I remember his, and Michael was actually a tall guy, had good range to him, was a good boxer. And I remember the coach saying, you know, we don't know any scouting on this guy. We've never seen him off of the post. So he goes, we've never seen him. He goes, but we know he's tall. We know he's got long arms. He has come into your house, and this is the last time you're ever going to be here. And don't you dare let him beat you on your home campus. And when I was done, I was literally to the point of frothing at the mouth. When were you, Slider, did that light turn on?
Yeah, that's what it was. It's the turn on, man, of getting over the jitters.
Now, what was that? He's going to ask, what was that time for you? When did the switch go off in your career when you're getting ready for a fight?
To tell the truth, is basically when you're getting your hands wrapped, really. Same thing. When you're getting your hands wrapped, that's when you're sitting there. That's when you and your coach is 1-0.
I think it's basically one of those things where...
Yeah, that's my phone is about to go dead, man.
All right. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to or thank before we go?
Yeah, I want to say thanks to Vinny LaManna, you know, for doing such a great job. I've known him my whole career. He's like a brother to me. And also this foundation I'm with, Find a Dream. You go on the internet to findthedream.org. It's a nonprofit organization, you know, to help kids do everything, kids and young grown-ups, to achieve their goals, man, like in music, go to school and everything. And if they're having money problems, then we pay for it.
Awesome.
Like, awesome.
We pay for it. And that's Rod Riccardi down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. He's headlining. And that's, you know, your donations. You donate, you get your receipts. And everything.
All
right. Goes straight for the kids.
Well, great. That's awesome.
Good to see you involved in stuff like that. And it was great.
Yeah.
You definitely have an amazing background. Something we love to have, somebody with MMA and boxing experience on the same show.
Yeah.
Because we cover all combat sports. So we'll definitely try to get the word out there that you want to fight Kimbo, too, because that's one fight I definitely
want. Okay, yes, definitely want that.
All right.
Ray, thanks for being a guest tonight. I appreciated talking to you.
It's a pleasure talking to you guys, man. It really was.
All right.
Have a good night, Ray.
All right, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
How'd I do, Rich?
You did great, yeah. I could have taken a 20-minute break at the beginning of that whole thing.
And I've been following Ray Mercer pretty much since his amateur days coming out of the Olympics. So, I mean, that interview was a cakewalk for me. I knew his fight with Francisco Damiani. I knew the fights of Tommy Morrison, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, Burt Cooper, all the great ones in there. So, I mean, yeah, that was that was fun. That was fun.
Yeah, that's something, too, that I'm going to be really excited to try to get that fight to happen. You know, he's serious. He wants to fight Kimbo, and I'm sure I can send a few emails and get that in the works, or get them thinking about it at least. I don't know if Kimbo will actually pull the trigger, but that's a good match. I mean, if you consider it, you know, they both got a little bit of experience against each other. Obviously, Ray's got way more boxing experience, but if you consider. And although, you know, Ray probably wouldn't like to hear this, but if you consider the age factor, you know, maybe it kind of evens things out because he's a little older than Kimbo. But, you know, I think, I definitely think Ray would beat him, but Kimbo would be bold enough to think that he could beat him. you know, and since he's already beat him in the cage. So if I put the feelers out and contact the right people, I get emails from Gary Shaw just about every other day. And Gary is the father of Jared Shaw, who's technically Kimbo's manager, even though, you know, it's Gary's promotion, I think, that Kimbo's fighting on all the time. So we could actually be a part of making that fight happen. That would be incredible.
Yeah, right.
That'd be something.
Yeah.
And then we could also harass, what's his name there, Lennox Lewis, about half the paycheck.
Yeah, right.
What are you going to send that half of his paycheck? But it gives us a little bit of a chance with Ray getting off early there. I had a feeling he really did enjoy the conversation. Probably would have stayed on forever if his phone didn't die. But we do have some news that I didn't get to earlier because we started late and we had the phone issues. One of the most bizarre stories I have heard in all of combat sports, although it's not unprecedented for somebody to meet their demise this way. I caught a story in the news this week. A former Chippewa Falls star wrestler was killed trying to race a train this past week. And obviously, you know, it's nothing to laugh about when somebody dies, but this is kind of oddly funny. According to witnesses, it looked like he was trying to beat the train and he didn't make it. According to somebody who was involved in this investigation. A guy named Joseph Henning was known for his competitive, fearless demeanor on the wrestling mat and his playful, friendly style off of it. And last Friday, he was struck by a train in DeKalb, Illinois, after he apparently tried to race it on foot. So the lesson of the week is do not race trains.
Well, try to avoid that if you can.
Yeah. And then, no surprise, they think alcohol was a little bit of a factor.
Yeah, I could see that.
Another story that's pretty interesting. Muhammad Ali was arrested this week for pirating UFC and boxing fights. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
It wasn't the Muhammad Ali.
One of the most common names in the world.
So it's spelled a little bit different. He's from Queens, and it's Mohamed Ali, and he's only 19 years old. But authorities claimed he operated HQStreams.com and HQStreams.net, both of which were seized in February as part of the Obama administration's unprecedented crackdown on digital piracy. Thankfully, that's not one of the sites I go to watch my illegal fights. But it's pretty interesting that his name is Muhammad Ali. He got busted. But basically what he was doing is he was taking pay-per-view fights and charging $6 to $25 for subscription fees for his users. And the sites that I go to just offer it for free. And I think there's like a loophole where if you're offshore somewhere, they can't prosecute you and they don't have laws in that their own jurisdiction to deal with that. So a lot of people are able to get away with it because of that setup. So it's one of those other stories. Of course, we talked about Arturo Gatti in the past couple of weeks. That press conference is going to be coming up pretty soon here on the 30th, I think.
Yeah.
And there's already some details leaking out. Lem Satterfield of RingTV.com cited a source close to the case saying that there's going to be an official announcement that it was a homicide, not a suicide, and not much more detail has come out just yet. But obviously, Amanda Rodriguez, his wife at the time, is going to be a prime suspect. And can't wait to hear what the story is going to be on that. And it's definitely adding to the legend there. A controversy surrounding his death. We had a setback for boxing with one of the major fights this weekend that we would probably be talking about. in analyzing if it didn't collapse, but Marcos Maidana and Guerrero is not going to have a Guerrero Torres rotator cuff.
Yeah, I heard about that. That would have been a good fight.
Yeah, that would have been a really good fight. And Guerrero is just, what a surprise. I mean, this is one of the guys that when I first started writing about boxing back in 2006 on the internet, he was one of the first fights that that I covered and wrote about. He had a fight on Versus back then. And just a heck of a guy. And you know, he had that experience where he had to leave boxing to help out his wife, deal with her cancer. She's in remission now and doing well. And he went back and just became better than ever, really. Almost like he really needed that little bit of a break to get that motivation back and get in there and put it all out on the line. He's just had one good fight after another since he came back. So hopefully he makes a quick recovery and makes that fight happen and see what happens. You may have noticed that Teddy Atlas was unavailable for the last couple of Friday night fights. He's actually training Povetkin now.
Yeah. For the big fight with Ruslan Chagaev.
Yep.
But they had some replacements with Teddy Atlas on the show. They had Bernard Hopkins, they've had Andre Ward. So as much as I like Teddy Atlas, I didn't mind him being off.
And, he had actually at first turned down the opportunity to train Povetkin because Povetkin wasn't willing to train in the United States. And then maybe he just got the right amount of money, or maybe Povetkin decided to give some money to his charity or something. But obviously Teddy just changed his tune and flew over there to help him out. And now the fight's coming up this weekend. It's going to be in German TV. Alexander Povetkin versus Ruslan Chagaev. And another fight on that card is pretty interesting. The White Wolf is coming back. Robert Helenius is fighting Sergei Liakovich, who's been kind of out of action for a little while. So that should be a pretty decent card over there. And we also have fight between Librado Andrade and Matt O'Brien.
Bad boy, Andrade.
I'm not looking at BoxRec here. I'm looking at like a little preview of what's on TV this week. That's going to be on Televisa, Mexico TV. And also on that card is Enrique Ornelas versus Alfredo Contreras. Librado.
Andrade's half brother.
Oh, really? Well, that explains a lot.
He pulled out Bernard Hopkins the other year in Philadelphia. I wanted to go to that fight, but I didn't get him some vacation in time.
Yeah. Actually, their records are here. We got Andrade is 29-4 with 22 knockouts. O'Brien is 18-2 with 7 knockouts. Ornelas is 31-7 with 20 knockouts. Contreras is 11-11 with 2 draws and 5 knockouts. HBO this weekend is going to have the first episode of Mayweather versus Ortiz 24/7. So if you have HBO, make sure you watch that. Ulysses Solis versus Jather Oliva and Raul Garcia versus Moises Fuentes. It's on Fox Deportes in the United States on Saturday. Solis is 33-2-3 with 21 KOs, and Oliva is 17-0 with 1 draw, 11 knockouts. And Garcia, Raul Garcia, is 31-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Fuentes, who's 13-1 with 6 knockouts. So that's your cheat sheet preview for television fights. There's also actually a Friday night fight on Telefutura. Frankie Gomez versus Adrian Granados and Omar Figueroa versus
Marcos Herrera. Gomez is undefeated, 10-0 and 8 knockouts. Granados is 8-1-1 with 5 knockouts. Figueroa is 12-0-1 with 9 knockouts. And Herrera is 6-6-1 with 2 knockouts. And then we have Jose Nieves versus Cuauhtemoc Vargas II on Telemundo, same night, Friday. Nieves is 18-2-3 with 8 knockouts. Vargas is 15-5-1 with 10 knockouts. We already talked about how Dana White and Bob Arum are at each other's throats. I sent some comments that White made about Arum, though. I just wanted to kind of follow up a little bit on that. Apparently, Dana White says Bob Arum is a complete douchebag. In addition to saying he's losing money for boxing. Basically, here's what Arum said to ESPN. We were always planning a tremendous quality event. It's going to be an unbelievable undercard with pizzazz and great fights, the same type of shows we've been putting on for Pacquiao fights. There's no competition. If Fox was to put on a top movie that night, it might be more competition. If Fox put on Manchester United that night, it would be more competition. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I mean, the movie part, maybe, but Manchester United, I mean...
Yeah, I doubt that.
That's like a worldwide sport, soccer.
About three people in the world watch soccer. About 3 people in the United States watch soccer.
Right.
I'm not talking about England or Brazil or, Italy here.
Right. But, I mean, I think it's a much more popular sport, period, than either boxing or MMA. I mean, soccer is like across the world, it's a pretty big deal. So I don't think that's necessarily offensive, like Dana White took it as. But anyway, Dana responded by saying, "You want to talk about arrogance? This guy is the king of arrogance. This guy is just a pompous, arrogant. I'm just tired of this guy. I'm tired of listening to his shit. First of all, he's one of these elitists, If you've ever been around this guy or the circles he's in, these are the kind of people that think they're better than everybody else." Oh, jeez, that's calling the pot calling the kettle black.
Ain't that the truth,
To explain to you how bad I can't stand this guy and how tired I am of him. Basically, he comes out when he first bought the company, UFC, and starts talking to, who is this talking? And starts talking all this, when we first bought the company, UFC, and starts talking all this shit about the Fertitta brothers and how stupid they were to buy this thing. This thing's losing tons of money. It's never going to work. Then as it starts to take off, he says, this thing, da-da-da-da. He's always got something to say. When we did this Fox deal, he's got a million reasons why Fox got into this business, and it's got nothing to do with the UFC being popular. The first Fox show is in November, and it goes up against the Pacquiao fight that night. He's like, yeah, they could put on a movie and be more competition. Yet his son, when we announced the date we were going on, flipped out and starts calling everybody in the business, from DirecTV to InDemand, you name it, pissed off that we're going on this night. Just everything that comes out of this guy, Arum, is pompous and arrogant. He's a complete douchebag. I'm sick of hearing it. So that's White for you. And actually, it's kind of interesting. White, I'm going to put out a little video of it later tonight, I think. But White was on Fox News a couple mornings ago. And Fox News, years ago, interviewed Rich Franklin on the O'Reilly Show. And they were talking about, how barbaric MMA was at the time. And now that regular Fox has the deal with the UFC, now all of a sudden they have this positive interview with Dana White. And he actually did pretty well in the interview. It was one of his better performances. But other than that, I guess we're running out of time and we're kind of out of topics. I was going to announce the Ultimate Fighter cap, but... I'm sure you can find it on the internet if you really want to. They have announced it. They got 2 classes, bantamweights.
bantamweights and lightweights, I think. Featherweights, bantamweights and featherweights. So check that out if you want to look at the list that's out there. And until next week, that's all we got. Thanks to our guests, Holly and Ray Mercer. And
me.
Be back next week. And thanks, Tony, for being the Rain Man of boxing.
Sure. Until next week. See you later.